Okay. All right. So today, we in volume five, which we're starting today. Okay, I'm skipping the first part, which is on navigating with electrical appliances like microwaves, dishwashers, and ovens, and stovetops, and other things like that. So that's, you see that hot plates, right? You see the summary of the laws on page 48 and 53. Okay, is now what I would like to discuss is the second part of the book, which begins with the laws of Bishul Akum. Okay, and it's Bishul Akum, right? What this is here in this case, and Bishul Akum understandably takes up the bulk of the space. So we are in this book on page 60. Let's say 61. It's 61. You know, this may be some review for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay. Okay. Turn to 61 on this. Now, at its core, our kashrus laws are certainly, there's certainly an element of keeping us in a degree of holiness because we are what we eat. Right? What enters the body is something that not only defines us, but it helps to create us. Familiar with a Gemara that makes its way about 15 times in Shas, that speaks about that God doesn't allow a stumbling block to fall before righteous people. And every time Tosfos says, what are you talking about? There's stumbling blocks all over the Talmud, right? So the Gemara answers, no, we're talking about stumbling blocks about eating. Right, someone can stumble regarding Shabbos. Let's say I accidentally put a light on Shabbos. So I stumbled on Shabbos. Did I do a disgusting thing? No, because 6 days a week, putting on this light is a permitted thing. Right? It's not. I'll give it by way of an example. What would disgust you more, eating a pretzel on Chol Hamoed Pesach, or accidentally biting into a bacon cheese and egg sandwich? The pretzel should disgust you much more, because a pretzel on Pesach, accidentally eating a pretzel on Pesach, of course, is still a kares offense. The bacon cheese and egg sandwich is a nisur la, but. I asked you which just disgusts you more. I didn't say which bothers you more. Oh. You see, you understand? Right? This is a tshuva of the Radbaz about a woman who was very sick and dying, and she needed food quickly. And they wondered whether to give her pork that was very much available right away, or try to wait a few extra minutes and get her something that was kosher. And instead, if she can stand the few minutes wait, she'll feel so terrible about having eaten pork, even though it was to save her life. So sometimes a rav has to be good at convincing someone, not only is this permitted, you must eat this thing. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter in 1848 on Yom Kippur, you ever hear what he did in Shul? He took a Kiddush cup to the Bima. It was in the middle of the cholera outbreak. He wasn't sick himself at the time. He just made Kiddush to make sure you all need to eat to be on your, and have your resistance up so that you don't get this thing, or if you do get it, that you can fight it. Remember, this came up in COVID also. You know, it was Tanis Esther, right, at the beginning. People were saying that, you know, if you get it now, it was very bad in the very beginning, remember? So he was saying is that you need your resistance. There was even a movement to have a public tainus, a fast day. And I remember hearing other rabbanim say, no, we shouldn't be fasting now. We can't be fasting. We need to have our resistance up for this thing. We don't know what it is, right? And people are dying in it. So anyway, this is how the Meiri explains that very cryptic Gemara in the Seches Sanhedrin that says in order to serve on the Sanhedrin, you have to know how 49 different ways how to prove that a sheretz is tar, or essentially saying that a pork is kosher. Because the Meiri explains that you have to have the mental gymnastics to be able to convince someone who thinks it's wrong, But you know that under these circumstances, it's right. So, okay. So in book six, there's a whole section on vitamins and medicines and whether vitamins and medicines need hashgacha to begin with. We'll talk about that in Mitzvah Shem in its own time. Now we have these new things that where the vitamins and medicines actually taste good. There's cherry flavor. There's this chocolate. There's these things that actually taste good. Not just for kids, but for adults also. These cherry flavored cough drops or cherry flavored coldies or things like that. And some are available with hashgacha. Be that as it may, this section that we're doing now, starting on page 61, is only in one instance for actual kosher concerns. All these other, what we call harchakos, listen to them, cooking, wine, bread, cheese, milk, oil. These are bread. Milk is the only one that is for milk and cheese, basically, but milk especially. All these others are for harchaka concerns, meaning just perhaps the original reason for kashrus is so that Yosef's brothers wouldn't eat with the Egyptians. In fact, it was the other way around. The Egyptians didn't want to eat with us because our kosher laws at the time were more lax than Egyptian. Egyptians didn't eat meat, right? So it says that when Yosef set the brothers up, it says the Egyptians wouldn't eat with the Hebrews. That's just because they hated them. Right, yeah, not because they hated them. The same reason why I don't want to eat with someone eating Chazal Trefnim. Although it's interesting is that you're allowed to eat right next to someone eating Chazer that you don't know because you're not going to, hey, we're not there. But you're not supposed to eat even between Machlokes and Fleishis. Ostensibly, they're both eating something permitted. But you shouldn't eat next to someone because, that looks like nice. That's not a falafel, that's a meatball. Oh my goodness, what am I doing? I have a mouthful of cheese. So that's a called, that's like a harchok setup. I put a box in between.
But what if you never eat off someone's plate? Like, it's not your custom, so you never.
Right. I mean, yeah, that certainly can be subjective. Okay. Most of these are harchok, but when it comes to milk, milk is actually for kosher concerns.
Yeah.
You go to some places, and especially in Eastern Europe, they mix other animals with cow milk, right? Whether it was for taste or the preservation, whatever it is, because it's cheaper. Or why should I not take advantage of these? I have so many pigs. Why should I not get milk from them? So and let me do something with it. Like, all right, no one's going to buy pure pig milk, but maybe I can put in. I sell 40,000 gallons of cow milk. Let me put in 2,000 gallons of pig milk and mix it in, and no one will know the difference. So when it comes to milk, the harchaka, what's called Chol of Yisrael, I'm sure you've heard of it, right? The harchaka, where you only drink Chol of Yisrael, is to assure that that it's you're not eating an unkosher product. Well, if that's the case, this is where Moshe Feinstein's genius, in America, but he still only ate Chol of Yisrael.
He had
Chol of Yisrael. Because he wanted to support those companies, J&J, So he said that if you buy a container of Delwood milk and there's an OU on it, that's not Chol of Yisrael because a Jew was not there when that milk was taken. But the OU assures that their Delwood milk doesn't have any pig milk mixed in, the same way that they say that Stella Dora cookies doesn't have any unkosher ingredients stuck in, or the same way that the potato chips have nothing stuck in. And By their determinations, according to halacha, but it doesn't mean that a Jew is standing there all the time, like in cases of Chol Yisrael.
Well, after the intense federal regulation,
it's enough to say that it has the same din as Chol Yisrael.
Yeah, there was a question back home. The containers that they used to collect the milk in, the big truck, and they used to have to, by law, wash them out and then steam them. Right, and apparently the standard cleanser actually had a animal base. You understand?
For milk?
Yeah, no, The container.
Strange, because that cleanser usually disqualifies anything from being considered food.
That's what I was always questioning. And especially since I had to steam it as well. It was a two-part process. The clean to steam.
Yeah.
And that's when the whole Halakha Israel in Atlantis became a big deal, because they then changed, because it was a government regulation, the government said you have to use a different cleaner, right? But it was a, I was pretty.
Generally, sure. Cleaners like that,
steam it. Yeah. You're already sterilized, you know.
Even before the steaming, just the cleansing itself. You have a question?
I think it's in the Shulchan Aruch that says that a Jew is supposed to be there when they milk the cow.
Correct.
But when
in a place like America, you can have a big company that dealt with milk. They're going to get, if anyone finds out that they mix pig milk in it, they'll lose $40 million. So that's known as mirsis. They'll shut them down. That mirsis means fear, the fear of such a thing. So this works its way into general hashkachas, right? The hashkacha, you can trust them because they know that there's such a profound loss over changing the sprinkles in the Haagen-Dazs store that they're not going to do it. There's no incentive for them to do such a thing. So we're going to discuss all of these issues. Okay. All right, and it starts with Bishulas. Yeah. You all right?
I'm in trouble.
Can someone help you here?
Yeah.
Yes,
please. My brain is full of coming off from the back. It's trapped. Yeah, yeah. To be exactly at the end of
The end of the plastic.
And the end of the this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So I need a little more.
Sorry.
Now it's balanced
on the other side as well. It's supposed to be the same.
Yeah.
That's
not. Doesn't look like it.
I've got three loose screws in the back frame in the back. It doesn't feel right.
No, it doesn't. It isn't.
It's turkey.
Okay, which side is it hurting on?
Here.
Yeah.
That's where it always
goes. Oh, okay. So
let's. They don't want to go in and fix the screws because the bone's just deteriorating.
Look.
I did this specially to bring a feeler.
I know. I've been trying to fasten your screws for a long time now.
It's good at the end, right?
Yeah.
Is it how
does it
feel?
Yeah, now it feels good.
I'm sorry, this is Mildred. It's very hard to hear.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting back in now. I know.
No, just when they're side talking, because they're away from the mic. So I don't know what the conversation is.
Okay, yeah, we're back in now. We're back now. Okay. Deborah, I want to get started.
Sorry.
All right, so there is a Mishnah in Maseches Avodah Zarah that tells us all of the things that are forbidden to us to derive any benefit from these things. Now, most of them have to do with idolatrous things. Okay, there's a similar Mishnah in Maseches Kiddushin that lists all the things we can't use, that a man can't use to give a woman to effect a Maisa Kiddushin. Right? Also in Kachim, the things you can't use to purchase or to donate to Hektish. All right, but here, Maseches Avodah Zarah is simple form. It mentions certain things that are forbidden in to have to be eaten. And the three things that mentioned in the Mishnah is bread baked by a Gentile, and milk that was milked by a Gentile, and food that's cooked by a Gentile. Now here, the question is not, the question on the bread is not a kashrus question. The bread can be perfectly kosher with only kosher ingredients. But if a Gentile baked it from beginning to end with no input from a Jew, that's called pas akum. Now, we may, of course, you know today that most Jews do eat pas akum. As long as the OU says it's kosher, I don't even know if it's Levi's bread. Levi's bread is pas akum, right?
They take color from it.
Yeah. So what's pas Yisrael is, you know, bakeries in Borough Park. You know, you can have some pizza stores that say all the dough here is pas Yisrael. Fine, that's your standard. But understand that the standard for pas Yisrael and pas akum is a harchaka question. Okay, someone who only eats pas akum but is in business. But is in business with a Gentile and drinks scotch with a Gentile is losing the forest for the trees, right? But anyway, I'm just saying that I'm not dealing with pas yet. Milk we just touched upon. What I want to deal with now is the bishul akum. Gentile cooks something. This is very much a question now. With people have help in the house, they have nannies in the house, they have different, or they have an elder care. So this is obviously a very much of a concern. So I'll just tell you flat out, this is the source, page 61, source number one, right? It's right here on this page. Okay. And it mentions these three things. Okay. And then the Gemara mentions the source number two. It elaborates on the bishul part. Okay, how we learn this is not really so important. Okay, right. So,
the distinct problems, given that we have agribusiness and corporate, it's actually banking Arnold Bread or.
It's made in such wide by.
There's a corporation.
Right. That's why I was talking about the forest for the trees today. So you have some gedolim in the modern times to tell us which things are more important to be to machmira, which when it comes to bishul akum in your home, that's already a different definition.
The
positive,
or even bishul.
What Gentile was connected to getting me this sterile Dora cookie, right? There's no word.
I don't know what that would mean. You know, the factory.
Right. So to start with, the question is, since the Gemara derives the din of bishul akum from a pasuk, it's from a pasuk at the end of Bamidbar, do we consider this to be a Torah law or a rabbinic law? So Rabbeinu Tam considers that it's a rabbinic law, even though it's derived from a pasuk. What do we say when something is derived from a verse in the Torah that makes it a Torah law? No, but there's something called an asmachta, which says, well, even though this law is derived from a pasuk, like Olado b'chol lebavchem, that teaches the prayer, we paskin that prayer is rabbinic. It's based on a pasuk. Yeah, it's like what we call an asmachta. You hear it again, asmachta. It means you're just somech. But here is the source number 4 or 5. These are all Ensex Rashi in different places in the Avodah Zarah. Okay, you see here, look at number 3, Rabbeinu Tam, number 4, Hagos Ashri, number 5, Rashi, in the Avodah Zarah Lamed Hey, Rashi again, the Avodah Zarah Lamed Ches. Okay, and he skips all the way to the Rav, the Aruch HaShulchan. Okay. That it's drabana. Now, when it comes to those, we elaborated on the milk, but when it comes to bread and cooking, do you have a sense that we're more lenient on one of these than the other? Bread, yes.
It does say in the Shulchan Aruch that if you eat pasach on a weekday, you should eat a pasach on Shabbat.
And not just Shabbat, but that you should try maybe Chodesh Elul or Seris Mechuva, certain times of the year. We would never say that on something that's Gala Asar. Try to keep kosher during Seris Mechuva. No, but it's a special harchaka, fine. But and then already in the Gemara says that if you don't have pas Yisrael available, you can use what's called pas palter, palter the local bakery. As long as you have a provision to make sure that the food is kosher, it doesn't matter that the Gentile was involved in baking it. Okay, but when it comes to cooking, for the reason Howard just mentioned before, baking can be done on a grand scale. The cooking generally is done on a smaller scale in your own, in possibly in your own stove. So when it comes to Bishul Yisrael, you need to rely on two leniencies. Here they are. Okay. And they work not in tandem. They are mutually exclusive of each other. In other words, if you have either one of these two leniencies, then the food is permitted. And here they are. One, the food can be eaten raw. In other words, it didn't have to be cooked in order to be consumed. What is this referred to? Well, most vegetables and fruits. People cook vegetables, but this, especially today, we eat carrots raw, we eat broccoli raw. Yeah. So a Gentile who cooks broccoli, sushi, all, yeah, fish, same issue. Okay. In fact, the second leniency relates very much to that very issue, because the salmon, tuna, sardines that you get in cans, those are cooked.
Yeah.
You're not eating raw salmon in those cans.
Right.
Right? That's been cooked. The sardines have been cooked. The tuna fish, the albacore, the solid wine, whatever it is, the chunk light, it's been cooked.
And so how do you find the fire?
And no Jew is involved in that. No, even when it says OU. There were some companies that were involved in that. Yes, that say this is pas Bishul Yisrael tuna fish. It's very hard to find that. So what's the that relates to the second leniency? Second leniency is Eino Ole al Shulchan Malachim. You know what I mean by that? Right? If it's not food that you would serve at a banquet, it literally means kings. King would need it. Right? It's not food. You don't serve sardines, tuna fish, and canned salmon to a king. I would say today that you can say it like at a wedding smorgasbord. You never see tuna fish. Tuna fish and mayonnaise. You might see raw tuna on the sushi, but that's raw. There you go. That's raw, yeah, so you get it on that side. Sushi, you get on either side. You get it? It's either raw or it's okay. So obviously this refers to a thick steak, something like that. Potatoes is never a problem because potatoes is not really olel shulchan malachim. But I have a time I've called the chavkei on this. I think the OU also gives a hashkacha on such a product. And because I've seen them at weddings. Not recently, I've seen it at the bar. What am I talking about? These, you ever see these potato chips? What are they called? Terra chips? You ever seen that? They're like purple with dots and they're orange and they're all kind of very expensive. Right?
What makes them red or purple?
Yeah, so. Yeah, but they're very fancy, and I do see them sometimes like on a table, and there's like a whole mountain of them. You ever see this?
They are cooked.
The chips, potato chips are cooked. When you buy Wise potato chips with an OU,
right,
that is a cooked product. Why are you allowed to eat it? Because
you wouldn't serve
Wise potato chips to a king. Right. But these kind of, I don't know if you call them potato chips,
they're called terror chips,
they're called, see, I don't know, whatever you call them. But these kind of chips, I hadn't seen at smorgasbord. I have seen it at fancy dinners. So I would think that while regular Wise potato, regular crinkled potato chips, the rippled potato chips, I don't know, the barbecue onion and garlic potato, whatever it is, you're right, a king would need that, and I wouldn't serve it at a wedding. But these other chips, I don't know, what's your experience? Have you seen them? I mean, they're pretty expensive. All right, maybe that's the excuse.
They have them in amazing
savings. Yeah. Okay. All right. That means that they're cheap. That they're
I think
part of the meal. Maybe. Okay. I'm not going to fight City Hall on that. But But that's one of the excuses they give for why they can eat that. Okay, so now there's a Pesachei Tshuva. Okay. All right, so the Aruch HaShulchan wonders why we're lenient on Pasachim, but we're not lenient on Bishlam. So look back on source number 7. Yes, a Jew who's involved in any part of that cooking process.
That takes it out of the
Bishlachim as well as Pasach. You know, famous stories where Biki Beger would go in the morning and light up a cigarette. And then he would throw the cigarette into the fire at the bakery.
Yeah, I know that.
Because this was his way of having some involvement in the cooking process.
The big
rabbi
guy was in Memphis.
Yeah,
so what he would do is he would turn the powder.
Yeah, okay, that's enough. So based on the Ramah, I got to tell you, which is, I think it's broken down a little later here, is that some rely on a pilot light. Even though a Jew didn't light the pilot light, but the Jew owns the store, so the pilot light is as if though it's his.
Huh.
So that the pilot light is as if though it was lit before the Jew. But you know, in many of these stores, the pilot light doesn't work. They have to light it with a.
Also, it's not like in the old days actually burn like tummy. Now a lot of times it only comes.
Right, only comes with electric.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, all right. So look at number 7, Aruch HaShulchan. Majority of poskim write that the reason for prohibition of cooked foods is due to intermarriage. Some of our teachers write that the reason is so that he should not feed him a prohibited item. In other words, Bishulakum has a facet of Cholav Yisrael, Cholavakum, Cholav Stam. This is page 63, which is, it's not only the Harchaka, it's the question of Kashrus. As opposed to Pas, as opposed to the bread problem, there it's just Harchaka. If you trust the help, you know, they're going to pour in some kind of unbeknownst to me, but usually people who are in your employ are afraid to defy your instructions because they're going to get fired if they do.
Yeah,
so you can trust that they're going to follow your instructions, even kashrus issues. Right? But that the original reason, Rashi says, for being careful with what they're cooking has to do not only with chasnus and hachakos, but because of kashrus concerns. Therefore, the Aruch HaShulchan suggests that since Rashi writes that in the Seches Avodah Zarah, we are going to be more stringent with bishulakum than with pasakum. Right?
Did the Gemara deal with it, where you have Gentile help in your home?
Yeah. I'm sorry, the Rebbe. Yeah. Look, in this neighborhood, it's been very hard to sustain. I don't know why, but we've never been able to sustain a real bakery. You had Grossinger's, remember? We had all kinds of different issues. So but the problem in New York is that the majority of food service business is on Friday night and Shabbos.
Right.
Majority. I mean, it's much more than 1/7. So that the weekend's your main objective, and if you can't work for 25 hours in the weekend, it's a business decision. So what some places do is they sell it to a Gentile, they have a shtar mechira during that time. All right, and all kinds of different issues. But because the bishulakum had two concerns, right, the halacha as well as the kashrus. So that's the Aruch HaShulchan's explanation for why we are more likely to be stringent on Bishulakum than on Pasakum. Okay, take a look at page 64. the middle of the page, it says, according to the Aruch HaShulchan, Rashi holds that the enactment of Bishulakim was instituted for both reasons. Both reasons being the Harchaka as well as the Kashrus concern. Hasakim, on the other hand, is only forbidden because of intermarriage with Harchaka, since the concern of eating non-kosher is not applicable. The reason is that in those times, it was easy to tell whether non-kosher ingredients were added to the bread simply by looking at it. So today, look at the note at the bottom. Today, of course, due to the advanced technology of the food industry, this is no longer true. And all bread requires a hashgacha to certify that all ingredients are indeed kosher.
Right.
So it requires a hashgacha, of course, but it does not require, you can be lenient on pasakum, except as Camille just said, Shabbos for some in Hagim, Sex with Tshuva, Choshel, okay. All right, so the Pisrei Tshuva explains that the practical difference between the two reasons arises in the case of a Jew who is a mummer or heretic, right? Meaning he doesn't observe the Torah. Okay, I'm not going to concern myself too much with that. Okay, so okay. And there is another concern when it comes to bread, of course, and it's worthy to know, although there are some not such reputable kashrus organizations that have violated this over the years, is that if bread is milchix or fleishix, it's not kosher. In order for bread to receive a hashkacha, it must be par. Have you ever read this halacha?
Yeah,
you got it.
Yeah.
But
they sell
French bread
daily
in the kosher supermarket.
So they're trying, okay, I'm sorry to mention, name names, but was used to give to Arnold bread that was dairy.
Oh, that would be good.
That
you
mentioned that particular, maybe somewhere recently, I can't even remember where, but since the old van died and the son's taken over,
yeah, I just spoke to the son a few days ago. Yeah, that's what they say. That's what they say out there. That he disagreed with his father, but in deference to his father, while his father was alive, he went along with it, and now he's they stopped
giving.
Mostly.
We're passing it for fruit.
Mostly apple juice. Yeah. Okay. So. I have to be careful going on the record, being recorded.
Don't worry, Rabbi, I haven't recorded. Okay.
This is recording. All right. So if bread, the bread that Camille is talking about is because the Gemara allows for milchic bread if it doesn't look like your classical bread, like a slice of bread.
Yeah.
This probably looks like a croissant or something. And I think this might have come up when we talked about it, is that in Israel, if you make a milchik bareka, you have to have a shinui. It has to be a specific shape, right? A potato bareka is shaped like a rectangle. A cheese bareka has to be a triangle.
That's why they're triangle?
Yeah, yeah. So that it should look different than the traditional bareka. Bareka is like a pastry, a rectangle or a square. But a cheese bareka has to look different. So that was the debate: is an English muffin different enough?
I would think so.
Yeah, sometimes someone will put a hamburger into an English muffin. But yeah, but one can see very clearly the English muffin is different enough from a slice of bread that it could be milchix. And the person will, because the reason for being a parev is that bread is such a staple of food that people just without thinking will put something milchig or something fleishig with it. So I don't want to mix. I don't want to cross over. Let me just have it parev, and whatever you put in there is going to be okay.
Yeah, I guess in theory you're right. I've never heard of
it. Okay. All right. So what are the foods that are forbidden? We don't have to go through that. This is page 67. Because we just discussed this. Right? The question, if you turn to page 70, of what do we consider to be right? Ole al shulchan melachim. the criteria of which foods qualify as being served at the king's table, right, or other important dignitaries, right, such as a president or prime minister, I would add to this a wedding. Wouldn't you consider?
I can think of just
the last one, the higher standard. Yeah, but if I would see it at a wedding, I would see. Yeah. I guess there are weddings that are weddings.
Yes, you're exactly right.
In addition,
yeah.
In addition, the status of some foods in this regard may change over time, exactly, depending on what is considered a sufficiently fancy dish to serve to a king. Okay. Now, the halachas of food definitely change with the times, right? Right? Okay. It's all right. I'll send for you if you don't come back in an hour. Okay, so we do see in many different areas that food can have subjective definitions of food for various reasons.
Individually
subjective, or the community? It might be subjective for the general area, or even it might be. I mean, I'll give an example that's not related to kashrus, but the definition of eating, let's say, that requires a bracha before, is a little different than the definition of eating for a bracha after. Right before, the benchmark for what you need to make a bracha on is less than what you make before eating, is less than after. Because after eating, it has to be a certain amount of food within a certain amount of time, right? Known as a kizayis b'chadei achilas pras. Right? A bulk of an olive within the time it takes to eat a half a loaf of bread. Okay, which fluctuates between 4 minutes to 7 minutes, 9 minutes. All right. So, but what if the food that you're eating or drinking, the drink that you're drinking, is by nature something that's very sipped slowly.
Hot coffee, hot tea.
Okay. Or for that matter, the drink, let's do drink, stay with drinks, is by nature something where you don't drink a Revius, but that's, no one's drinking a Revius of Blue Label Scotch or something. They're just drinking a shot. So does the shot now become the sheer? I know people who make Kiddush on a shot. Kiddush needs a Revius. Favor Shukamara. Right? So if this is what this becomes, the Revius, like a shot becomes like a Revius of wine. Right? So not only can you make Kiddush on that shot, you have to make a Bracha Achrona on it. Of course, there. Haba Hatalia. If you don't make a Bracha Achrona on it, you can't make Kiddush on it.
Right. But is it accepted you make Kiddush on it?
I don't.
But they have just said no.
Yeah. But there are some who do allow it. And people who, if whether it's kept in the breach or not, but people are doing it. They've seen it. They've seen people do it. They've seen rabbis do it. So they say, I'm going to do it. You're going to tell me now after all these years that I've been doing it wrong for 20 years.
They keep doing it. If you just have some kind of action, you have no clue as to what.
Yeah, this is what Rav Huna meant when he said when you do something two or three times, it becomes mutter for the rest of your life.
Can't you just make it on a bigger amount and then after that just don't drink it? You don't have to drink the whole thing.
Yeah, but you know, try.
It's not.
Pour that, all that Glen Moray, you know, yeah, okay.
No,
all right.
If you drank out of it,
I'll see. Well, you pour it out, maybe pour it, just, you know, and pour it back. No, but it's a problem. You shouldn't. You have to drink from something that has a Revius in it.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. But it's, you know, it's depending on some of these scotches are expensive. You know. Anyway, the shear of the bracha achrona, and also maybe even the bracha rishona that you make. Mishnah says in brachas that if the vegetable is usually eaten raw and you cook it, the bracha becomes Bray Pi Adama.
If you cook it, it goes to
Shakon Ibidvara. If you usually eat it cooked and you eat it raw, that's a more common thing probably. like a raw potato. Someone just wanted to eat raw potato for that reason. Raw.
Is that even
a bracha
on it? It's
you would make a shahakol.
Because wouldn't
it
be...
It sounds reasonable that maybe there shouldn't be bracha at all, but the bracha is a bracha. There are a lot... A lot of this has changed in the last 50, 70, 100 years. In fact, the Mishnah Berurah says the bracha on raw carrots is shalom. In his time, raw carrots was such an unusual thing. No one ate raw carrots.
But now we do.
Now we do. But we also eat raw broccoli and raw cauliflower and raw onion and raw peas and raw string beans. We're eating all these things raw because we know that the vitamins get drawn out in cooking process. So people prefer more raw foods. So, okay.
Even when we cook hash cook.
Yeah. Right. So as such, the bracha rishona can change based on convention. And that's our question here on page 70. Does the definition of ole al shulchan malachim, is it liable to change with time? Okay. So the Aruch HaShulchan talks about potatoes. Concerning potatoes, it seems in my humble opinion that they are called not being served at the king's table. And if a Gentile cooked them with water alone or baked them, it is permitted for a Jew to eat them. Okay. Simple foods for the lower class. Right. Although the wealthy also eat them occasionally, this is due to their proliferation, not because they are significant food. Okay. All right, whether tarot chips are in this category or not, I'm not sure. Okay.
I don't think so, because I think random people eat.
Okay, and the Sefer HaKashrus, right, you see it. Okay, look at note number 14 on the bottom of page 71, you see it right here. This is what I was just talking about. An interesting related question is whether potato chips are subject to restriction as bishlach. On one hand, they are made out of potatoes, but on the other hand, their form is totally changed from that of potato that would be served at the king's table. Yisrael Belsky is quoted as holding that they are not subject to bishlachim, while Rav Moshe Feinstein may have felt that they are. Rav Moshe Rosenthal, potato chips subject to provision of bishlachim, Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society. Okay, I discussed this two sides of that, as well as the question of tarot chips. Okay, so that what the conclusion is, source number 21, is that the definition of Ole al Shulchan Malachim depends on your time. Okay. All right, all of these things, tuna fish, herring and although herring tends to be raw and though that marination does seem sometimes have a din of cooking.
Yeah.
Right. Let's look at page 74, where the bishulakum applies to liquids. There's some liquids and
You didn't answer, but like with coffee, where you drink it over,
you would need a bracha achrona because the nature of coffee and tea is we do drink a revius of these things,
right?
But we drink much more time than the required,
right?
Unless you purposely leave a revius towards the end. You could drink it faster and
I think the difference between Ashkenazim and Sephardim, I think Sephardim don't make the bracha
achrona. They say it takes too long.
Yeah.
Look at page 74. The question at the top of the page is, right, does Bishul Akum apply to liquid drinks such as coffee that may indeed be served as fancy steak dinners?
Okay.
So the Bishulak, the Aruch HaShulchan says that the poskim were all lenient on Bishulak.
Regarding all beverages?
Yeah, because the coffee beans are bottled to the water. And the water is certainly not subject to Bishulak. It's eaten before it's cooked. It's eaten, right? So that's a bit of a chiddush. that the coffee beans are bottled to the water because you're drinking it as a liquid. So and it bottle means like it disintegrates into the water. It's not, you know,
the ground.
Yeah, maybe what you're getting in is doesn't look like it anymore. There's a shinui. We have that already also. Okay. So Avad Yosef also writes that it's entirely permitted to drink coffee prepared by a Gentile without any question. And I'm sure you probably have heard about the origins of coffee. Fascinating. And how different communities. It's very interesting. There's a lot of Christian writing, especially Islamic writing, about the prohibitions of coffee. Because the drink was considered like the drink of the devil and it was intoxicating. But there's they haven't found any considerable or serious poskim that ever wrote against the consumption of coffee. Christians, popes were writing about excommunicating people.
You drink coffee.
Yeah.
The caffeine was?
Yeah, and they thought the caffeine was intoxicating. And Islam goes, also, when it was first introduced, it's funny because we had these coffee clutches, it was Bittel's mom, and it was leading to licentiousness. It's amazing that,
You know that they were like men.
Yeah.
This
is what was going on with coffee.
But it is true that you become addicted to coffee, and then you need more and more.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Does tea satisfy a coffee urge?
Well, it has caffeine.
Does it have caffeine in it? Like green tea has caffeine in it. And
it's much less than coffee.
Depends how much sugar. Black tea looks good.
It's got the caffeine, but it's still less than. Also, I found that if you use like the Melita drip thing, you get very, because it just goes straight through. It doesn't like sit there.
Yeah, but what if you drink a lot? Because you get your,
but then you're in trouble.
Okay, the general practice is that there's no such thing as bishulako in regards to coffee. The history of Maxwell House coffee on Pesach was, I have a whole collection. Some very very interesting back in the 30s where I think it was originally a tea company maybe, but the word is getting around that since coffee comes from a bean.
Oh no.
And beans are kidneys. That there was a word out there that you can't have coffee on Pesach, right? Maybe it was some kind of like a chocolate drink company that wanted to corner a market and wanted to make sure that Jews aren't drinking coffee. They'll drink this chocolate milk, something like that. Something with the, let's think, something that's close to foul play. So that Maxwell House had to do a gimmick that if you buy a tin of Maxwell House, you get a free Haggadah. Oh, 1934. Okay. I have the original. I have one of the originals. And so that was their way of
I keep it up to this day.
It's
great. Yeah, that's what's up.
I think I'm just missing only two or three years, but I have, they come out with they used to change them every year. A slight different cover, a different size. They used to be very tiny. That's really small ones. The original ones were these tiny ones. Now the last like 15 years, they've been all the same. Okay. So I think I'm going to stop here. And we're going to discuss what leniencies can be used. But we pretty much, this part that says cases where bishulakim is permitted, but 76, we've pretty much covered almost all of that about the a Jew taking part on any part of the process, lighting the fire, throwing a matchstick in, mixing it up a little bit at some point.
Is there any attempt to, because wine is hardly the only beverage that people gather, do you expand the haka to other ones of liquor?
It's interesting that there are poskim that say we shouldn't drink even yayin levushal in their places, like in a bar or in any
like beer.
Tosfos discusses it in Maseches Avodah Zarah Daf Lamed Hey, and because if the whole reason is halacha, how does yayin levushal help us?
Right.
You know, I know how yayin levushal will help us if the reason is libation. But how does that help us if the reason is our chukka? You can socialize guns fine with cooked wine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
certainly with liquor. Tosfos just answers, ain lanu elach hidusho. We just have the original reason, and we have to go with that reason.